Thanks as always for listening to Fluff and Crunch. In today's episode, I talk with Richard from Fright Show Classics, a drive-through RPG publisher of, call them, classic D100 horror adventures that are compatible with Chill First Edition from Pacesetter and also its current, call it its current version, Crypt World. I've got links to all of those things in the notes. And again, thanks for listening. Well, Richard, I really appreciate you taking your time to come on the show today to talk about the things you're doing that I learned about on Twitter or X or whatever it's called this week. And then I looked at on Drive-Thru, Fright Show Classics is what you're called now. That is your that's the official line that you've got going. So I want to talk about what you're up to, but I want to, before we get into that, let's talk about what got you into gaming. When did you get into this hobby, and what's kept you in it?
Well, thank you, Jeremy. I really appreciate the opportunity to share more about what I've been up to as someone who returned to gaming after about a 30-year hiatus.
Oh, wow.
I just go back to junior high. Had a friend who was into Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Would bring his books to school, and I would kind of thumb through them. And eventually got involved with just playing at his house. In fact, the last day, I think, of eighth grade was my first gaming session, somewhere around 1988. Wow. Was playing AD&D for a number of years. Really sort of loved the art, the style of the old Monster Manual, and rekindled, you might say, a lot of my love for monsters, Universal Monsters, as a kid. And from that, got involved with the game Chill, sort of discovered this horror game, which to me seemed like more of a pure Monster Hunter style of game. So I still played AD&D, but kind of added on this Chill game, which was the second edition of Chill.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Which one?
Yeah, that was the one that I caught. I was kind of told about this for earlier edition and told about Cthulhu and some of the earlier early 80s horror games that that were still out there in some format or another, but started with the second edition of Chill and played that for a number of years, and eventually just sort of kind of grew out of gaming, I guess you can say, by around 92 93. Graduated high school in 92, and moved on to college, more adult interests, I guess.
Sure.
And kind of gave up on gaming around that time, by around 93, friends moving away, getting rid of my books, and just kind of doing the academia thing is where I ended up ultimately. After a brief stint in radio, ended up just sort of teaching full time. I've been doing that full and part-time since the early 2000s, and then got back into gaming post-COVID. I am one of those people.
Oh,
who,
so you're really recent.
Yes. Around 21, I think, is when I rediscovered my love for horror gaming and really just sort of dove back into it.
That's really cool. So we have some overlap, like so many people. Like D&D is always that's the on-ramp. You know, there's virtually, it seems to me, there's like virtually nobody who got into gaming not through D&D first. And I played the original, and then original D&D, and then AD&D, got into it through my older brothers, and then very quickly went into things like Star Frontiers and science fiction things, and went, you know, discovered a Star Trek game. And this was in the earlier to mid 80s. And I remember very distinctly when Chill First Edition from Pacesetter came out.
Okay.
And that was when, I think that's when I was in junior high, I'm almost positive. I think I actually might have gotten the starter set when I finished eighth grade. But I remember that very like Hammer Films 70s, ever like just shy of campy horror vibe. It seemed so, I don't know, not like pure and innocent, but it was what it was, and it didn't try to be anything else. And I remember playing that for a number of years and really, really loving it. And then, you know, the whole other story, the sad tale of woe of Pacesetter, the company, and how it went belly up very quickly.
That's right.
Yeah. And I remember seeing ads for and then seeing products in stores for the Mayfair version of the game, the second edition that they picked up, but never played it. Actually had bought the books only a couple of years ago because I wanted some background material because I was playing Chill 3rd edition, which was a short-lived Kickstarter kind of reboot, reimagining to a certain extent of the game from several years ago. But yeah, I had those lulls. I had some lulls during college where I wasn't gaming. I had a lull, a short lull while I was in the service when I wasn't gaming. And then, but pretty much actually I haven't stopped. But yeah, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Chill 1st edition. I liked 3rd edition. There were a lot of things that were good about it because I'd never played 2nd edition. Actually never really dug the aesthetic, like the kind of like smeared blood looking covers and things like that, but whatever. But when I saw your, when I saw your stuff on Twitter, I was like, oh my gosh, it's it's first edition Chill. This is lovely. And that's when I started reading about your stuff. So let me ask you this before we get into that. What got you back into gaming three decades on? What like drew you back into the, you know, into the basement with the shag carpeting?
Let me just say, Jeremy, I really appreciate the fact that you were reminded fondly of first edition Chill my material. That's kind of exactly what you know, I've been trying to evoke. You know, I COVID wasn't that hard on me necessarily. I mean, lockdowns and the kids had to stay at home, and you know, I actually still worked, still taught through it. But you know, I guess if I had to point to any thing, you know, I did lose some family members by late 20, early 21. Just kind of got a different perspective on life. And I guess you could say just the need for an outlet. Yeah. You know, for a hobby, which I had been sort of denying myself, it seems like, for so long, just throwing myself into my academic career. And
wait a minute, you were a professional and you had all these other life responsibilities, and slowly over time you unknowingly shed like that personal hobby side.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I,
many
I,
people
yeah I didn't really have any, I mean, you know, any serious you know, hobby that I was investing time and resources in pretty much since I gave up gaming. I mean, it was you know, that had been kind of, you know, video games here and there, but nothing that really sort of, I considered sort of a major investment of my time and energy. And, I was kind of looking around, okay, what if I start playing Chill again? You know, I'd kind of been toying around with that, I guess, for a while, and discovered, this game that sort of, you know, reminded me a lot of at least how I kind of remembered Chill, second edition, which is Crypt World.
Yeah.
The game that was, you know, intentionally kind of going back to first edition Chill. And it was Crypt World's sort of version of, you know, old school monster hunting, as you say, sort of hammer horror, you know, 80s horror inspired stuff that really sort of drug me back in. And I was hooked at that point, you know, started going back to some of the first edition Chill books, collecting, you know, obviously everything for Crypt World. And, you know, again, just sort of from that point on, from about the summer or the spring of 21, this all happened very, very quickly.
Really quickly, yeah.
But yeah, I just kind of got hooked, started playing online. Still haven't played face to face, but
gotta fix that.
I went back to my AD&D group actually last year, and we started face to face gaming again. But yeah, playing online, meeting folks that are also interested in, you know, the Pacesetter edition of Chill and second edition of the game, Crypt World. You know, horror fans. And by around 2022 is when I was ready to kind of keep the hobby going and go deeper, and started to have this idea of making my own adventure series.
Let's do this really quickly for people who aren't familiar. I mean, horror gaming is a niche, you know, it's, and it's it's for people who really, really like it. Really, not to sound corny, like it speaks to me or something like that. But for whatever, people who really like horror, that is a niche within this niche hobby. And Chill, obviously, especially the oldest version that Crypt World, you know, seeks to emulate, has a unique system. And I doubt that many of our listeners right now are really clued in on what that's like. Now, I don't own any of the Crypt World stuff. I looked at it in stores and things like that. But does it operate by the same like color-coded table that Pacesetters Chill used?
Yeah, it's an action table game, one of those old school crunchy, forgive the expression, games that is percentile, but you don't just necessarily roll to see if you hit or miss. There are various levels, degrees of success.
I think this was the first game, Chill First Edition was the first game that I played that offered degrees of success and such a varied continuum of degrees of success. And I'll find a copy of what the Chill First Edition action table looks like. I'll put it in the notes. I'll put a link to it. It's a percentile based system and skill based, if I remember correctly, the way they dealt with it. So you would roll, and then based on what you were going up against, your roll, you cross-reference it on this color-coded table, and it would tell you if you were successful, what kind of degrees of success, which then obviously in combat would do, you know, potentially more damage or things would last longer. Actually, in a lot of ways, I look at it now, it was an outlier and a bit ahead of its time. The next thing, I think it was similar to the Marvel Super Heroes, and especially Marvel Super Heroes Advanced, that came out in the 80s. It was similar to that. And then Gamma World 3rd Edition had a more lengthy and convoluted table. But I actually think it's one of those things that system-wise stands up still because it offers degrees of success, which so many systems still don't.
Right. And as you say, Jeremy, it's sort of an acquired taste, or it's very niche. Horror is very niche. And this kind of mechanic ultimately is very niche. And so, doing all the math that is involved with, here's your ability score. You rolled a certain, number of points under that score. You figure out the difference to determine where, you're at on the, on the scale or on the table. Kind of liked that old school, again, forgive the expression, crunchy kind of mechanic.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah. Even kind of coming back into the hobby after 30 years, I mean, the fact that it wasn't just a simple, hit or miss, and, combat maybe just doesn't really take that long, or determinations are pretty simple and straightforward. I kind of liked the complexity that was offered in the Crypt World / Pacesetter Chill action table. I just thought it was kind of made the game a little bit more dynamic and made results sort of more interesting, more varied, more complex.
I'm looking at I'm looking at the table right now. Like I said, I'll put this in the notes, or at least a link to it. It actually makes things, you talk about doing math, a little bit, but I actually think that the color-coded table that you, where you cross-reference your results on, I think that actually simplifies it. It actually doesn't require you to do that much because of all these color-coded cells.
Right.
That you then look down at the bottom of the page and it tells you, like, hey, if you're an unarmed combat or armed combat, or if you're doing a fear check, it had a good fear system, I think comparable to, or at least the fact that it had it, like Call of Cthulhu, which was, always one of its big calling cards, was that, you've got the whole sanity mechanic and fear,
right?
That adds a mechanical edge to it instead of just saying, "Hey, player, your character is afraid." But I actually think that this, I don't ever remember having trouble with it. My, 13-year-old self trying to make sense of the thing.
Well, that being said, I did, when we were playing online and I was talking to people on Roll20, I did actually have someone on Roll20 who does scripts, API scripts, or macros, and making rolls a little bit more easier for online rollers. I did have someone actually design one that would determine the action table roles for me. So we don't actually sit there with color, you know, the copies of the color coded table. And, you know, if I was playing face to face, probably I would be using that, even if I'm doing my own stuff, which again is not necessarily the action table. But I'd still be using it. But yeah, online now, it all sort of is automatic for me, you know, these automatic rollers. So, The table is ultimately the pace setter action table is ultimately not what I use in my modules, even though, again, the game, the adventures can be played in that fashion or just played kind of in the context of first edition Chill or Crypt World. I essentially water it down, you know, since I'm not designing officially third party licensed material.
Yeah, you gotta be careful enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did a little kind of homage to it, I guess you might say, with the four different levels and, you know, changed some stuff around. But yeah, definitely inspired by that ultra crunchy action table from the original game in the 1980s.
Your Fright Show Classics content that's on Drive-Thru, I see it, you comment on it, you call it, it's like D100 or percentile-based rules. So how is this then completely compatible? If I were going to pull out my Chill first edition or second edition, which is, I mean, pretty similar, or Crypt World, how quickly and easily do your adventures fit into that? If I wanted to use those rules, or is there enough rules material in your modules that people don't even need those?
Yeah, it, you know, obviously it's they're pretty easy to use in that context. And I was very grateful that, you know, Martin Caron of Chill and Dan Proctor of Goblinoid Games early on in this process, I don't want to, you know, say gave me their blessing, but I did sort of, you know, want to make sure that I was honoring the great legacies of those games by making this material that is obviously very easy to port over into one of those systems. And so still very, very grateful for their support throughout all this. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that, again, I wasn't, you know, stepping on any toes, I guess, or doing anything that they didn't agree with. In fact, ironically, I initially wanted to just use the Chill name and the old school logo, but was not allowed to do that. So had to come up with something more, slightly more original. You can play the Fright Show Classics Adventures, originally Fright Night Classics. Yeah. And we guess we can get into that if you'd like, but you can play them just, you know, on their own. You don't necessarily need a system for them. I think I give enough in each book to sort of get the feel for how they might be run, and maybe devising your own damage system for the four different levels of success. But yeah, they obviously are very, very adaptable for some of these older games. Cthulhu maybe less so.
Yeah.
But again, a percentile mechanic that is could probably be adapted to Cthulhu without too much trouble, although I've never done it yet, despite requests for me to do that.
It seems to me, though, that the looking at your list of titles and the cover art, which I love, the cover art, honestly, and I want to talk to you about your sources for that, but it just screams Chill First Edition, which I think is glorious. I think story-wise, and it seems like your adventure titles, those seem to be, you know, they fit more with that that kind of feel. So I see where you're coming from on that. Let me ask you this. How many different adventures do you have so far?
Well, we just released our 10th adventure, Golem, which started out as a Roll20 thing that I threw together. And Timothy S. Brannon, who's also written another adventure for us, did this one. Just released that. So we have 10 modules, looking to do, at least this year, hoping for another six.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I really appreciate what you're saying again, Jeremy, about the art and the style. Ultimately, mechanics are interesting to me, but I tend to lean toward more toward style and and trying to evoke that sort of old school horror pulp horror genre. Yeah, again, I'm just really excited if folks are responding to that, and just like to continue doing that past number 10 and kind of seeing how far I can get this year.
So then you started writing these, and you know these are things that you're running, you're playtesting, and then you now have other people who have joined you in writing some of these. I mean, are you co-authoring, or are you actually just like working with people and saying, hey, you know, here's the general vibe we're going for, and then someone says, I'd like to write that, and they do it? I mean, are you doing these together? Are they joint projects? Are they individual, or kind of under this heading and this feel that you're going for?
It's sort of a mix of all of that. I wouldn't say that I've necessarily done well. I guess you could say Chris Halliday. I gave him a very, very basic cover art for, actually was attempting to evoke the Jim Holloway cover for Chill for the original game. Yeah, he wrote his venture called A Wolf in the Fold, and I just gave him a very general, you know, let's do a Victorian era werewolf adventure based on what happened to the guy in the painting or the original artwork.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And he just cranked out a really great, I think it's one of our best adventures. So I had much less of a hands-on approach there. Otherwise, they are sort of coming out of collaboration with other players, ideas. I think one of them was co-authored, Scott George, who's done a lot of great work for the line too. I think we collaborated on our Aztec Mummy adventure, which is very much a sort of
heritage of horror.
Yeah, heritage of horror is very much a sort of call out to or an homage to Kolchak. Kolchak the Night Stalker, which Scott introduced me to. Yeah, Kolchak the Night Stalker, I guess I could say when Scott introduced me to that after we started playing Crypt World early 22, I had never watched it as a kid, and that show really fired watching the original movie and then the TV series, even though it was only one season, really fired that sort of monster of the week imagination. And so we've done a couple obvious sort of homages to Kolchak over the line so far.
And if you're listening and you're not familiar with Darren McGavin playing Kolchak the Night Stalker.
So actually the show only lasted 20 episodes. It was just that one season of the series.
Oh, that's right.
There were the two movies that preceded it. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. But if you're, I'll find some links to where you can find that or look it up on YouTube. A perfect representation of the genre that Chill 1E and your Fright Show classics and Crypt World sits within. I think it's golden. And Darren McGavin was he was such a great character actor. Did such a great job in that show. Yeah, those things, I watch them too, and I get thinking like, oh, I would love to find, you know, you want to carve out time from your regular gaming schedule, at least I would, to try to run something like that, you know, to get people playing something like that for that feel. But then there's that whole problem of hours in the day and days in the week.
Well, I guess I've had enough of that to invest in this project to try to give that, again, horror serial, horror anthology vibe from, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, even going back to some 60s horror that I also missed early on as a horror fan. Dark Shadows actually started with kind of watching Dark Shadows around 2021 when I got into Crypt World and Chill, and then boom, I mean, when I discovered Kolchak in early 22, that was sort of, that's what kind of determined this whole process. That's what led me into wanting to make these myself. Yeah.
So then you, like you said, you have 10 out right now, and I'm looking at them, and they're all somewhere in the range. I see 28 pages. What's about the typical page count?
Yeah, the PDFs end up, you know, about between 24 to, you know, 28. I think we did a 30-pager last year. This is our last adventure of last year, Death on Wheels. They're basically short, meant to be played in one night or maybe two sessions. We have one called Medieval Mysteries, which is has even sort of essentially two mini adventures instead of one kind of medium-sized to small adventure. Those can be played, you know, in 1 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Essentially they're kind of one shots that can become campaigns. I kind of like to encourage folks to maybe take one module and kind of keep going with it, right? Turning it into their own maybe medieval campaign or Victorian campaign. The character cards hopefully help. That was one concern that I had when I was consuming a lot of Crypt World and 21 when I got back into the hobby that where are the characters for Crypt World? Chill first edition had character cards, yeah, but Crypt World never did. So I kind of wanted to make sure we included that in the modules. And character building and campaigning is sort of built in, but they're essentially one shot adventures that can be played in a single night or a couple hours.
As I remember, the Chill first edition adventures came with these small, they were like, it would be four cards per page that were characters,
mm-hmm,
double-sided. And the idea was you cut them out and you'd give them to your players. And
every module I do eight characters. Eventually going to have to repeat some of the characters. Actually, we're doing a couple sequel adventures this year where I'll be, kind of porting over at least maybe half of the characters from the original module. Saves a little bit in the interior artwork costs. Trying to keep to that eight unique characters per adventure. Mm-hmm. Keeping that as a standard.
I like that idea though of reusing them, because if you do sequels, or folks, if you're not, the links to the drive-through page for Fright Show Classics is in the notes. So go take a look over these. But I see that you have adventures that are set, it would seem to be, in like different general time periods. And so it makes sense that, why not? If someone got one of these and played one of these and then decided, oh, they liked it, and then, a couple months later you come back and say, hey, let's want to play another one of these things, we can use your same characters. It's 6 months later or it's a year later. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, Chill first edition did have modules that took place in different eras. Yep. Chill second edition, I don't think so much. At least I recall most of it being pretty modern day.
Yeah.
Same thing with Crypt World. Not a ton of material for Crypt World, but I think the majority of it is essentially modern day. So I wanted to do that. I wanted to say, okay, well, what about doing this old school monster hunting, monster of the week gaming in the Middle Ages, or in the Victorian era, in Victorian England, in ancient Greece. We did have an ancient Greece horror fantasy a bit of that vibe. I was originally not going to write that because I didn't really know the genre that well, but my author kind of had to back out for personal reasons. But yeah, just doing those sort of different eras, 1990s adventure. Now mm-hmm. we're doing a 1980s adventure. It's about to come out sometime next month. So yeah, just at least majority, I think I'm trying to keep the majority in modern day, because I think that's what a lot of horror gamers tend to prefer, at least with these games. But also trying to do some different eras to say, hey, what about kind of a more of a horror fantasy thing in an older era or a more ancient time period.
Well, I remember years ago, it was actually probably it may have been one of the last times, if not the last time, that I ever ran Chill first edition when I was in high school. And are you familiar with Thutmose's Night?
Oh yeah. That's one of my favorites.
Yep. That's a great one. We ran Thutmose's Night, but we decided to set it in like the 1920s.
Okay, yeah, that works.
And obviously horror, your traditional Call of Cthulhu approach is 20s, 30s.
Sure.
But I like the idea of taking horror as a genre and plugging it in different time periods. Like 1950s, 80s, earlier than that. I hadn't thought about pushing, far, far back into the ancient world or the medieval world. But it just opens up different possibilities for the types of stories you can tell. And then it gives the players opportunities to play different kinds of characters. So they deal with what's thrown at them differently. I think you can take a known genre and you can breathe something new and novel onto it by just putting it in a different point in time.
With the majority of our adventures being modern day, so a large percentage of them are, I try to keep that in mind to, you know, let's do something a little bit more historical. In fact, we're doing a, coming up here pretty soon, a colonial America adventure based on Jersey Devil folklore. So we're doing a Jersey Devil adventure. Scott George is working on this. In fact, that's going to be a Jim Holloway cover. The late Jim Holloway's family allowed us to use a piece that he did that evoked very much of a colonial Jersey Devil vibe. So yeah, it was never published, so we did get permission to use that. So yeah, doing those different eras, kind of important to me, to at least keep that in mind, even if in my own campaigning I tend to keep things pretty modern day. And stay with that more kind of X-Files, modern day monster hunter kind of vibe.
That is really cool. I'm glad that you're doing this. I'm glad that there are folks out there who are, you know, call it carrying the banner for this, waving the flag for this stuff, because it's a different, you know, again, horror we know is a niche. And it's not that it's not for everyone. It's just that not everyone is interested in it. However, it's a great palate cleanser. And here's my suggestion to people. It's a terrific palate cleanser. You know, if you've been running high fantasy, you know, superheroes with capes or superheroes with swords kind of thing is what a lot of high fantasy is nowadays, or something else, you've been running it for a long time. A good classic horror campaign, not even campaign, adventure is a great palate cleanser, because it's a genre I think that virtually everybody, whether they could explain it or not, they get the tropes, you know.
Yeah, it's sort of a double-edged sword, Jeremy. I think I totally understand where you're coming from, but I think what you'll see a lot of people say about, you know, if they remember first edition Chill, or if they, you know, they think about these kinds of horror games, they, oh, that's Scooby-Doo. That's campy. And one thing that really drew me to, say, Dark Shadows and shows like Kolchak the Night Stalker is that they were trying to bring this old gothic kind of horror into a modern setting, which is, at that time was modern, 60s and 70s, without playing it for a joke or without making it campy. It was all the creaky haunted houses, but totally played straight.
Yeah.
Right. And not sort of fodder for jokes, and you know, we have a lot of fun when we play these games, but the horror is again, it's kind of creaky and old school, and you might think it's sort of campy, and you know, Chill could be played that way. I guess even Crypt World could be too, but so there is sort of that's fighting it. You know, horror is very niche. This kind of horror is very niche. So it's sort of it's an acquired taste.
Sure.
But again, I do appreciate how you're describing it, because as a palate cleanser, as a you know, evocative of again, sort of old traditional monster hunting, right?
Well, and too, I think it's tough if you're gonna say, okay, listen, we've been playing, and we do this in my group, you know, periodically. We're playing something for a long time, and either we decide to move to something else, or we decide, hey, let's just take a like 2 week break from this, and let's do something that is just completely different. As that palate cleanser, as that nice like, you know, a transitional, like a moment where we just step outside where we'd been for a long time. And I think in situations like that, if you're going to do that, say you're going to spend two sessions, maybe three sessions on the outside, or maybe just one, you don't obviously have a lot of time to ramp up description of a unique world, you know? And that's where I think that something where the tropes are well known actually makes your life as a GM or player easier. And obviously then it's a choice by your group. Are you going to play it, you know, a little more campy, or are you going to play it more serious? Because I think it goes either way, but it's Indeed. Just really handy. Like the idea, like you said, like the classic haunted house, you know, with creaky boards and cobwebs and, you know, creepy writing on the on a mirror or something like that, those kinds of things. It doesn't take a lot of description by a GM for players to get it. And that enables you to get right into the story without, you know, trying to explain, like, okay, so you don't know anything about Warhammer 40K. Let me explain what a Space Marine is. People are like,
that's fair. No, I like that. That's great. And I one other thing I would say maybe related to that is that I've always been on this side that says, you know, running a horror game is not a hard, complex thing, right? There's sort of this divide that I've been finding as I come back into gaming after 30 years that, oh, horror is sort of specially run and you need to be a really talented GM to scare your players and to literally kind of horrify the players.
Right.
I definitely am on the other side of that debate. If you want to call it a debate, I just think that, you know, there is no
people
special
on Twitter would want to debate it.
Yes, exactly.
We're not going to do that.
I don't think it's a mystery. I think you just same as fantasy. You have fun with these games. There's no special secret in how to run a horror game, yet you still, and people, I think, kind of stay away intentionally from horror, maybe subconsciously, because they feel that there's, some kind of a weird way to go about running a horror game.
Right.
And I don't think I've ever really been there as either a GM or wanting that from a GM as a player. They're tended to be easy to use and easy to evoke those classical horror tropes.
Well, that's excellent. Well, I am I'm gonna have to take a look at some of these myself, and because, like I said, every time I see you have that nice purple border, which has it has that kind of rock look to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, we voted on that during the Kickstarter phase. Okay, there were some different kind of pulpy colors. And I think the majority of the backers said, yeah, go with the purple.
I think it's a proper, you give a proper nod and an homage to that first edition Chill without less like shamelessly aping it. It's like I said, you're carrying the banner for it. So like I said, I've got links in the notes. I think that's neat. So I'm gonna suggest to people that they should go take a look at those. And you said you're looking to do, you said about six this year?
Yeah, in addition to the one that just came out, we're doing a again, next is sort of a 1980s sort of, I guess you can kind of call it a Stranger Things bit of an homage, that kind of module, which will be two mini adventures. In fact, one of them will be a solo adventure. But where you play kid adventurers, kid monster hunters, that sort of vibes what we're going for in Tricks and Treats. So it's actually two adventures that take place around Halloween time. That was a bit of a tip of the hat to Tales from the Dark Side, which was a big anthology series that I loved in the 80s and 90s.
Remember that.
Then we'll be doing, like I said, a couple sequel adventures. We're going to go back to our Elizabeth Bathory character that Chris Halliday did, I think, such a great job revamping her, excuse the pun, for the 21st century. And so we'll have Vengeance of Bathory coming out probably March, April. I can go through the rest if you'd like, or folks can just follow along on social media pages.
Looking at what your production schedule, what are you most looking forward to? What do you think that, you know, what would you love to put in front of someone if they're not familiar?
Wow, that's a great. It's like trying to choose your favorite child in a way.
Just tell them separately, and then tell them not to tell each other.
Well, are you talking the ones we've done already or the ones that were set to
upcoming?
That we're working upcoming. Okay.
Like as a manager of this effort, which one are you looking at and saying that I'm really excited about working on that or having it worked on, having it be done?
If I had to choose one that's kind of most interesting to me in terms of an adventure and a classic and a throwback, we're doing one set on a ship called High Seas Terror.
Okay.
And it is a very intentional, or at least another intentional homage to Kolchak the Night Stalker, where you will play retirees on a cruise and you are being hunted by a Rakshasa.
That's awesome.
And I still have yet to write that one. I'm gonna be spending a good amount of time trying to get it right. I'm not the best adventure author. That's why I hire these folks that are much better than me. But that one's gonna be fun to run. I may have to bring in a co-author on it just to help me with some of the hooks and some of the plot points. But that I think is, yeah, thinking of the maps for that one, thinking of the character cards, that's probably going to be a really fun one to do. And it'll be set in the modern day, not in the 70s, which is obviously when Kolchak was taking place.
Well, that wonderful thing about that is, I mean, you've got so much, there's so much information out there in terms of like maps of cruise ships and things like that, that and
I have seen one that someone did a battle map for a cruise ship, but we'll be doing our own in terms of where we go with the maps on that. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, again, that's one of those things that given the internet, given the ability for people to take a look at pictures and see videos, and we see all these advertisements for cruise lines immediately evoking the vibe, enabling players to have a sense of like, okay, this is what it looks like, this is what it feels like, enables you to get right into the story. I think that's a
I
cool
guess
idea.
I guess I might need to take a cruise now to get this done right.
Don't get me started. Cruises are my spirit animal.
Okay, well, I may have to call you up to help out with this one. But no, that's probably going to be the funnest one.
Excellent.
I guess and in a sense, all these adventures kind of start with kind of personal interests, and pretty much, again, although it's there's collaboration as well. The Vamp one that we did last year, the Death on Wheels, that's almost probably the most personal of all the ones I've done because I grew up in Northern California. It's at that time, it's set in the 90s in the car culture. We're going to be doing a sequel to that one,
Cool.
which will be more of an homage to, say, 90s vamp films and From Dusk Till Dawn,
Gotcha.
Working with the great John Zalesnik on the cover art, which is really exciting.
Very
Um,
cool.
was done probably our first formal RPG guy who's doing art for us. So that's going to be a lot of fun too. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Rakshasa on the cruise ship and trying to get that one done in hopefully in a way that makes sense for folks to play.
Well, great. I appreciate you coming on and talking about this. This is obviously it is of personal interest to me because of my gaming background and like call it my gaming history and those nostalgia points that you can still look back to. That's the wonderful one of the great things with gaming is you've discovered like there are times when you can actually go back and you can have that thing that you had once. And still enjoy it, and even because you're older, you get different things out of it. But yeah, this definitely has a sentimental, nostalgic feel for me for it. So, folks, if you're interested in this, I said the links are in the notes below, and we will keep our eyes on Fright Show Classics and the stuff that you guys have got coming out over this year.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. And again, it's a great honor to be with you. And thanks for letting me get the word out.
You bet, man. Thanks so much. Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking with you.